Hello and welcome to episode 131 of Just Get a Real Job. I'm of course your host, Jamie McKinley, and thank you as always for listening to the podcast. In all honesty, I still can't quite get my head around that we're on episode 131 of this. You know, it just feels like yesterday that we started doing it, and it's coming up for 4 years in November, so time's getting a bit scary. I'm at that point as well where I realise that it's been 4 years since lockdown started as well, and it's just a bit terrifying to think. But I'm aware this is a conversation that I feel like everyone's having. It's very much in the zeitgeist there. Well, I don't know, in my life anyway, I feel like I've been having this conversation with everyone from all walks of life, whether it be Uber drivers or people at work, and several times on this podcast, so I won't bang on about it too much in the intros. But we've got a great episode in store for you this week, and joining us on the podcast for this episode is brothers John and Matt Reynolds. And it's always really nice having siblings on the podcast. It's a couple of times now we've had family or siblings come on the podcast, sometimes separately, sometimes at the same time. But yeah, it's always a nice thing. Definitely must be something in the family genes that are making all these people so creative. But John and Matt were both really kind with their time. We recorded this one back in just before Christmas at the end of the last year, so it feels like ages ago since we recorded it, so it's nice to listen back, and it's nice to put this one out finally as well. A really interesting conversation. John and Matt, at the end of last year, released their comedy drama series, Birchall's Pints, which is streaming now on Amazon Prime. They made that off their own back with their friends and with loads of people a couple of summers ago, and you know, it's incredible that they made that happen and how proactive they were. They're also behind Some Guys With A Camera, it's a production company. It is a production company, but they also have like an Instagram page, a YouTube channel, and they're on Facebook and stuff as well. And they've been making some great stuff with that for several years now as well, and that's really popular. So John and Matt are both seem just like people that make things happen and are just doing it, and it's amazing to see. Both really, really interesting, and we had lots of great chats, particularly about how they utilised their sort of local community as well to help them make Birchall's Pints. And you know, it was just a, you know, really interesting conversation, and very happy to finally be putting this one out into the world. So I hope you enjoy this week's episode. Lots to take away from it, and yeah, here we go, episode 131 with John and Matt Reynolds. Creative industries are merely mess. Artists like their goods are torn to shreds. The government will spoil your hopes and dreams by offering a useless retraining scheme. Such amazing talent, why can't you see that the government has decimated the industry? And now the years of hard work can be thrown away. And people who don't care, well, they will say, just get a real job. John, Matt, thank you very much for coming on Just Get a Real Job. It's only like 5 days till Christmas when we're recording this, so you'll probably be the last interview we do of the year, so thank you for speaking to me at this busy time of year. I know we've been trying to get this one for a couple of weeks, so I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, yeah. I'm just really glad that our schedules have all kind of aligned for this one. 100%.
Yeah, no, it's never easy. Do you both want to introduce yourselves one at a time, and the listeners will learn which voice is which? We sometimes have two guests on, and they usually cope fine with it, so I'm sure they'll manage. Because you're both brothers as well, obviously.
Yes, so I'm Matthew Reynolds. I'm a young director, writer, and sometimes actor, but mainly director and writer, based in Liverpool.
Hi, I'm John Reynolds. I'm Matt's older brother. I'm more of an actor, but I do some writing as well, and did a bit of producing on Birchall's as well.
And Birchall's, obviously, we'll get into the full sort of extent of the show that you guys made. Like, it filmed on, like, over 2 years ago as well, when you were a lot younger, and sort of made on a low budget with like a lot of local community people around and stuff like that. We'll get into all that, but like, do you just want to sort of quickly talk about your sort of what your ambitions are, what you like sort of are all about, and then we'll get into the proper podcast?
Yeah, so we run some people have used the word company. I like to use the word troupe, I think. It best describes us. We're like a filmmaking troupe. It's like a few of us are filmmakers, a few of us do different things. It's a very, to be honest, it's quite an unofficial network. There's a few of us. We mainly run it with our mate Connor and our mate Ethan as well, but a lot of the same actors we work with. And we're called Some Guys With A Camera because that's essentially all we are. We just make films that we want to make. I think it started, you know, we formed it about nearly six years ago now, when we were, you know, struggling to get noticed, struggling to find things to be in, projects to work on. So we just said, we're going to have to do it ourselves, aren't we then?
That's cool. No, I've got lots of questions to ask about Some Guys
guys with a camera, because obviously, like, you were making a lot of stuff before, as you say, before you made virtuals and before everything else has sort of taken place. And it is quite a little collective you'd built in community filmmaking and stuff. And I'm sure we'll get into this as well, but there's not enough community spaces for young people to get into filmmaking, especially in working class areas, especially where I was from. So, like, I think it's a very important thing. But we sort of normally like to start the podcast by asking people's earliest creative memories. So I don't know which one of you, Matt or John, would like to go first for this, but you might have overlapping because you're obviously family and grew up together. But what were your earliest creative memories? Matt, I'll start with you.
Ever since I can remember, our nan, Nanny Beryl, she ran a theatre group in Liverpool, which was part of a charity that helped adults with learning difficulties or special needs. And her role was, like, she ran, like, the drama group. So she put on, like, a show twice a year. And ever since I can remember, I'd be going to, like, watch these shows when I was young. And, like, they'd just be so inspiring, so fun, so funny. They'd mainly be, like, musical cabaret shows. So, like, variety shows. So bits of drama, mm-hmm. bits of singing and dancing from all different kinds of people. I remember I used to pester her and pester her, like, can I be in the show? And she said, okay, you can do when you're 7, because that's, like, a reasonable age. So I remember being accepted into, like, getting to do the first show when I was 7 for the Cottage Theatre Company. And I think that just changed my life, because it was the first time that I'd been involved in being on stage and being creative as part of a group. And yeah, that was just a really lovely opportunity. And I think that's the same with you, Matt. That was our gateway into being, you know, actors and performers.
100%. Yeah, like, because I, Kate, obviously a bit younger than John, I was like, do I have to wait till I'm 7 as well to start being in the shows? And then that day finally came myself. And then we had, I guess down the filmmaking route, we always had some sort of VHS video camera as kids. So we'd, you know, we would make sitcoms and superhero films. Like, it's quite crazy looking back, the creativity we had. These weren't just like home movies. They were like franchises with sequels and like all these crossovers. I thought was really, really crazy for how young we were to be doing all that. Yeah. I'm sure it was not good, but...
And I was listening to another interview that I think you were on, Matt, and you were talking about like doing stop motion with Lego and things like that. So you were doing stuff like that as well. So very creative.
From like middle of primary school till genuinely into high school, which is way too old to be doing it at that point. I just kind of like slaved away in my room, just spending hours and hours and hours on these like stop motion animations. One of them got about 65,000 views on YouTube, which to my
very impressive.
It's still the most viewed thing I've ever made.
That's impressive, though. That's great.
I've done all these plays and things since, and it's still not been viewed more than that. But yeah, I think that definitely, you know, I think I learned a lot about what I wanted to do later on. And there's quite a lot of famous directors as well now that did start out doing Lego animation. I think it just makes you a bit more creative, and you've got more control over what goes on then, because you've not got actors and you're not limited to locations. You just can physically build it yourself.
I think it taught you like locations. Like, everyone wants to, you know, go out and make a film like that, but as you know, like, it takes years to get something made properly. For you know, you'd spend hours on those projects for just like a few seconds of screen time. But something that really inspired us growing up as well as from Gromit, I think that's what got you doing the stop motion.
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you're also learning your craft, as you say. It's patience, and it's like being able to sit in a room for 2 or 3 hours and, or probably longer, move things around. And, you know, like, as you say, like Joe Cornish and Adam Buxton, obviously they started off on Channel 4 doing that in the 90s. And like, Joe Cornish is quite a well-known director now, so I'm sure it doesn't hurt to have that background for sure. And, you know, that many views on YouTube at that age is also is incredibly impressive.
Fame got to me too much.
You had to go on to fulfill your dream after that. You could match it someday. I'm sure you will. No, thank you both for answering that. It's always lovely having people that grew up together, especially who are related, on the podcast and been able to share in each other's sort of memories. I can see you both on, like, sort of looking at each other when you're talking, oh yeah, of course, like, you know, I remember that stuff. I also wanted to ask about how, where you're from has influenced you. Obviously, being from a place like Liverpool, which is, I think, very similar to Scotland in a lot of ways, especially, you know, some of the industrial cities in Scotland and stuff, a lot of like working good people, very down to earth people. I always see Liverpool is quite different to a lot of other parts of England when I visited it or been around people that are from Liverpool. So how has that sort of influenced you both as creative people? And you can start with you this time, Matt, if you want to go first.
I think it's one of so few cities that has like so distinct of an identity and something to be proud of and like an image. So we're from like a small town outside in like in the outskirts of Liverpool. Mm-hmm. And there's so much like debate over whether that is Liverpool and whether we can class ourselves as Scousers and like where's actually Scouse. In any other city, they would not care. But there's so it's people take so much pride in being from Liverpool that it matters what color your bins are. Because only if you've got purple bins, then you're Scouse. If you haven't, then you're a Wool. You're not one of us. And it's just, I think that's all, you know, it's crazy that people are so meticulous, but it also gives you an insight into how proud people are to be from Liverpool. Obviously, you know, the Beatles, massive artists as well, but a lot of smaller creators and actors you might not realize are from Liverpool also are as well. I think the more I kind of thought about where I was from, the more I realized, you know, it produces a lot of pride in people.
No, that's really interesting. John, what about yourself? I'm sure you have lots to add to this subject.
There's countless ways to answer this question, because do you talk about the music with the Beatles? Do you talk about the theatres? Do you talk about the comedy? I think, like Matt said, we're so lucky to have so many aspects of culture in the city. Like, at one point in time, we have been the best for music. We've been the best for comedy, football, film. There's always been that legacy in this city. It runs so deep in the culture. I think one thing that I love about how this city has inspired me is we've got probably about 5 or so main theatres, and each of them are completely different with the sort of projects that get put on. So we've got the Empire Theatre, which is always massive, big musicals. Tom Hanks was here a few weeks ago. Then we've got the Everyman and Playhouse, where loads of legendary actors started off. So Jonathan Pryce, Julie Walters, Stephen Graham, a lot of incredible actors started there. And then we've got a lot of brilliant, like, smaller theatres as well. So there's the Hope Street Theatre, which is fairly new, which supports, you know, more independent productions. There definitely is something for everyone in terms of the culture here, whether that is, you know, going to the theater or watching live music. You know, you could live in this city and never run out of things to do.
No, so interesting. I've only been to Liverpool once, but I really liked it, and I'm a big Beatles fan, so I was getting very into all that stuff. I'm going to ask you a question a bit on the cuff. I hadn't pre-written this one, but I asked this to Sean Fagan and Jack, who I believe you kind of know, who we'd had on the podcast twice. Yeah. Both great guys, and you know, I'm particularly, you know, it's really nice to see what they'd sort of both went on to achieve with Boiling Point and other things. But I asked them what their sort of Liverpudlian Mount Rushmore would look like. I'm going to ask you both this on the spot, but who would be on your sort of Mount Rushmore of Liverpool with icons from the city and stuff?
Should we do it kind of like,
do a joint one if it's easier?
Yeah, a joint
one. How many would that be? 2 each? There's 4 people on Mount Rushmore. Five. Yeah, I always forget. There's 4 in there, yeah.
So I think let's start off by saying, let's say Paul McCartney, just because of how enduring, you know, his legacy has been. Of all the Beatles, obviously he's had the privilege of living a bit longer than John, but not only has he done the Beatles, but he's had an incredibly successful solo career. He's, you know, he's still releasing albums today. And then there was the video of him when James Corden took him around Liverpool about 5 years ago.
Yeah, carpool karaoke.
Absolutely. Yeah, so Paul McCartney obviously has to be number one.
I think if Paul's there, John Lennon has to be there. I know
we can maybe give them a joint one. They can have like one together.
Yeah.
I think that's only fair. They're sort of known as a double almost, aren't they? Lennon and McCartney. So
yeah, to be honest, I'd say they can't. They go together, don't
they? Let's have them together.
Yeah, 100%. I'm going to nominate Ken Dodds, the comedian. Mm. Just for about 70 years, this man ruled show business. And I think he's one of the most respected names in comedy. And a lot of people will, I think because he's from the city, you still see murals of him. You still see tributes to him. There's an exhibition of him at the waterfront currently. He's very much still honoured, even though he's not been on telly for 30 years. He passed away about 5 years ago, but he's still very, I think he's probably the biggest influence on the Scouse sense of humour of recent years. I'd say you can tell how his comedy still prevails, really.
Interesting. So we've got two more left, don't we?
So number 3, if Ken Dodds kind of inspired that older generation of comedians and actors, I'd go for the one who's inspired like the current crop of actors, which is Stephen Graham. I know.
Yeah. I think Jack and Sean had him on theirs as well.
Absolutely. He's not really been going that long in comparison to other actors. But just thinking about his CV is mind-blowing. You know, the people that he's worked with, DiCaprio, Brad Pitt, Daniel Day-Lewis, Robert De Niro, Al Pacino. He's worked with all these massive legends, yet at the same time, he is very active in discovering the next crop of young talent. So, you know, discovering people like Sean on Boiling Point, working with his wife, Hannah, with Matriarch Productions. And then he's also the one that scouted Jodie Comer as well. I think everyone that I've met who acts and like is studying acting, aspiring acting, we've, you know, Stephen Graham has come up at some point because he's literally from like a block of flats in Kirby. And now he's like, you know, one of the biggest and best actors today. He's kind of defied all the odds in terms of where he's come from, his upbringing. You know, he's worked hard.
And he stayed grounded as well, hasn't he? Which is, I think, the most resonating thing.
Absolutely. And there was the video of him accepting the...
Was it the Biffa or what? Yeah.
It was, yeah. Was it the Richard Harris? Richard Harris. Yeah. But he's, you know, so humble. I just think he's really inspiring. And, you know, with him alone being in a project, that automatically gets the money to bring in, you know, new directors like Philip Barantini and get their story shown again. Yeah, so definitely him for inspiring the next crop.
Very good. So we've got one more left, haven't we? One more to fill.
Yeah, it's the big one, isn't it? Do you have any? Is there another that you would have picked? Because I'm really struggling.
Are there any like female artists from Liverpool? So it's not like a full male lineup of icons as well.
I would say if I could pick one, I'd pick Jodie Comer.
I think Jodie Comer, she's gotten people so excited about the prospect of being an actor and the amount of actors that I've spoken to that have said that she was the person that inspired them to get into acting, and just how quickly she became popular just through her talent. I think, to be honest, she's such... The amount of people she's influenced already, and she's still so young. Yeah. I think she deserves a spot up there.
Cool. Well, thank you for doing that. I know it took us on a bit of a tangent there, but it was very interesting. So it was a fun question. I was like, when people ask me that, I struggle to fill it as well. There's loads of iconic Scottish acts you could put on it. And I hate being asked things. I'm like, oh, I don't know. I'm going to miss people out. I've got another quick question, and then we'll sort of go on to get into it and stuff. But this is about favourite word or phrase from Liverpool. So I love asking this question because as always, you guys get some great answers. So which you can both decide who goes first, up to you.
One that we didn't realise was kind of like, I don't know if it's just a northern phrase or like a Liverpool specific one, was the phrase made up.
Yeah.
I think you went to uni and like you were talking to some southern friends.
Yeah.
You were talking about being made up and they were like, what?
Even like northern friends, like I lived in another city for 3 years for uni and I just say, oh, I'm made up with that. And like they didn't know what that meant. And I was really shocked because it doesn't sound like a Scouse thing. It doesn't, you know, I can't actually pinpoint. It's definitely a Scouse thing, whether other cities do it as well, I don't know. But yeah, just, it's funny when you didn't know something was slang. There's obviously the Scouse stereotypes of slang, but that's a word I use multiple times a day just to say that I'm delighted with something.
No, I know I've heard that one in Scotland, but again, I don't think it's not like a common used phrase. It's just like, I've just heard people say, I know what it would mean. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Scran is another one for food.
Yeah, a bit of scran.
Scran's a great one, yeah. I always thought scran was Scottish, but I don't think it is because I've heard loads of people say it in the north as well. I think it's one of those, you never really pinpoint where words come from. I love it. That's why I love asking these questions about where you're from and about words and stuff, because I think it all ties into creativeness and people making things and stuff. It's so linked, especially with a show that you guys have made. I think you can tell it's very like proud of where it's from and where it's set, which is important.
I think it's something that always has to be, well, it will always underlie what I make, even though not everything I make is political, not everything I make is explicitly got the word Liverpool in it. It's always going to be a part of who I am as a creator, and I will never like ever betray that. I could never even, you know, because it's always going to be based off your own experience. I'm always going to have that attitude behind everything I do, the sort of culture that comes with it.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I've got another question on identity to ask later, but let's get into some of the more create, you know, stuff linked to your journeys into where you got, because obviously this podcast is very much celebrating non-linear careers and looking into sort of real living artists like yourself who aren't necessarily like big celebrities that, you know, which I'd love to have on a few, but you know what I love about doing this is we get to speak to people that are just doing it themselves and are on the rise. It's always really nice. But I wondered sort of, I know that you met Connor and some of your other collaborators and stuff a community film class? Was that a class or a college?
Yeah, do you want to, like...
Yeah, so the origin story is our nan had seen, like, this newspaper article, like, because we... I don't know, I think we were definitely too shy to go to it. So I'm not sure why we did, but it was, yeah, like, we're looking for children from the age of, like, 14 to 18 to come and take part in this, like, filmmaking course funded by, like, the Plaza Cinema in Crosby in Liverpool. I still, to this day, don't really know, and it... I think this is what makes it so interesting. I'm not the sort of person that would have gone to something like that. I certainly wasn't the sort of person who would have friends. I didn't have many friends in school, let alone outside of it. So yeah, something just was like, right, we'll go to this. We'll see what it's all about. If we don't like it after one day, you know, we don't have to stick doing it. And then we just got on really, really well with Connor and like a couple of other people. And those films that we made with that group, we kind of felt like, right, the next step is to go and start doing it ourselves.
It was just kind of like the stars aligned. We met Connor there, who we've worked on pretty much everything with. Yeah. I met my now girlfriend, May, there as well. She's a writer and she does a lot of writing with you.
Yeah.
So it is like a family because we have grown up together since 2017, I think it was, about 6 years ago.
There's a lovely photo from the Birchall's Pints. Like, I'd say 99% of the people who worked on Birchall's Pints I've met throughout the years since. But there's a photo of like a good six or seven of us that are like day one, like, friends that all worked on Birchall's together. So it's such a lovely photo knowing that, you know, we were all 15 one day working on these like little projects, and then there we were.
The idea of it was to like make educational, like anti-bullying films that could, you know, be given to schools, and, you know, pretty a straightforward idea, but we had other ideas. We kind of put our own sense of humor and creative spin on it. So one of them was supposed to be like a straightforward like anti-bullying film set in a school, but it turned out being like a crime comedy drama.
It's a gritty crime drama with so much farce in it. Like, you could just tell. And I think, like, though it wasn't our film, it was done by, you know, the company that were doing the course. We watch it back now and go, the amount of influence they let us have on that was shocking, because it's clearly one, you know, the signs are all there of what we then went on to do.
But I think that's definitely what's helped us progress, like having that freedom and that confidence. It's just with, you know, like support from like the old filmmakers or having access to the equipment. It just let us collaborate and experiment, try new things. Mm-hmm. And then by doing that, we all found our place. So I found that I prefer doing the acting. You prefer the directing and the writing and a bit of acting as well.
Yeah, the odd cameo.
We kind of all fell in, we tried a bit of everything, and then we all kind of found what we feel like we enjoy the best and do the best. And that's kind of been our formula since then, hasn't it?
And I sort of touched on this at the start, but obviously places like that are clearly very important, and you probably both wouldn't be where you are now without something like that and without having the opportunity to do that. So do you think, are these sort of schemes still quite common where you are living at the moment, and or do you think they're sort of, unfortunately, with the cost of living and things just being cut back on, and there isn't really enough opportunities for young people now?
They are few and far between. The only reason they got the funding really is because the Plaza Cinema is so brilliant at being a community hub. You know, they have a lot of Q&As with really good people there. They had one with Ken Loach a few years ago. They show a lot of local films. They'll have the premiere there. We filmed there a few times with our projects. They have a really great community base, and I think that's part of the reason why they got the funding. Unfortunately, we know that that isn't really the case across the rest of, you know, the country necessarily. And we found that opportunity by chance as well. It wasn't like we were seeking out the opportunity. It was just kind of like on page 30 on the newspaper that our nan read. So they weren't really being shoved in our faces. It is sad because, you know, people complain about the kids having nothing to do, but, you know, there's no, like, in our town in Ormskirk, there was like a swim pool, and that was about it.
That was it. We had to venture a bit further
to find
something like this, 100%.
So I think we were the only people who were kind of like moving from outside the city, but, you know, people that are growing up in other areas might not necessarily have the access to that.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, there's definitely a massive issue around access. And like, I find a lot of the time on the podcast, we have somebody that lived in London or one of the bigger cities, they're like, oh, I was always at the theatre, I was always doing, you know, doing this. And then, again, it's purely an access thing. But what's really interesting is how DIY you both are as a result of what you learned there and what you sort of take into. But did you, either of you, study anything at university that was related to the arts or anything? Or have you sort of all done most of your creative projects sort of on your own terms with your own company, etc.?
We did creative A-levels, so I did film, John did media, but then we both went off to uni and got academic degrees. I did philosophy, John did history. And I think I do look back and think I wish I'd done a creative degree. But at the same time, I am interested in philosophy and philosophy. I'm not saying my scripts are very deep at all, but, you know, it's definitely, you can definitely, the scripts I've written since my degree, you can tell I've studied philosophy. You know, it's not going to not come in handy, but very much self-taught, I would say.
But I think part of the reason why we chose that is because, like, the whole idea your podcast, Jamie, it is this whole thing of, you know, everyone's got to have a backup. So it's like, if you say to someone, I want to be, you know, a script writer or an actor or a director, it's like, okay, but what's your backup? And that's a question that everyone has asked in this industry. So I think partly out of fear, like, don't get me wrong, I do love history and I'm glad that I did a history degree. I just wish that there wasn't that kind of, because I think just after I graduated, there was that whole thing with the government when they put out the, when Fatima's next job could be.
Yeah, that's what inspired this podcast, genuinely. That was the advert that made this podcast happen. So I'm very grateful to the government for making that advert as much as
But that's the thing. I think that's the thing that made us like pull our socks up and go, right.
You know, that's so much anger.
Yeah. You know, this is without the arts and without, you know, films, the TV, music, how would any of us have survived?
Yeah. Being stuck inside? It's the same people saying all those things that are like watching Netflix every weekend, listening to Spotify. Like, where do you think creatives come from, if not grassroots?
Yeah, I sort of grapple with a sort of guilt sometimes from having worked. I've worked in TV full time for like 3 years. I'm very fortunate to have a job that's quite creative and stuff. But sometimes I go, is my job a bit pointless? Like, really, like, what am I doing? Do you know what I mean? I think this, and because I used to work in adult care and stuff, that's a real proper, like, not that what I do is not a real job, but what I mean is that was like life and death, and there was an importance to that job. But then I don't think it is unimportant. And I read an article last night which made me feel very vindicated, which was this, I think it was the Times or something, had done a study that Doctor Who being on at Christmas meant that like 6 in 1,000 people lived longer because they were more likely to go and see a doctor, having seen a doctor care for people on telly. And I was like, TV is important. You know, we can make a difference through the creative industries. And I know you shouldn't have to justify it that much, but I just thought that was really interesting. And as you say, everyone's watching Netflix. Like, it's even in something like lockdown, which was horrible, what kept us all going and kept us all sane, like, the arts and creativity, and that's what makes life worth living for me anyway. So, you know, I think it is very important. So it's, you know, you're completely right.
Everyone was talking about Squid Game and Tiger King then, you know, and everyone was like, yeah, but that's just because everyone's like sat down watching it all at once. But no, it's obviously carried on because, you know, we wouldn't be a society if we didn't have
It's just what brings people together, genuinely. Yeah. Like, it's, and it's entertainment.
In everyone, such a divisive like world at the moment as well.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like with our, like with the UK, like we live to work, but so many other countries work to live. Like, entertainment's what we, you know, we have stressful days, we go through tough times. It's music, film, theatre, things like that for me that keep me going.
No, for sure. You come home and you're like, right, I'm going to stick this on now and watch it. Or music or podcasts or whatever, you know, it's very important. But just to sort of move on slightly, we'll talk about Some Guys With A Camera a little bit more before we go into Birchwood. But like, when, that started pretty soon after you did the community thing then, and that sort of kept going since, I'm assuming.
I remember waking up from, I think I'd moved out to uni. So I was living in Liverpool and I just woke up one morning and saw Some Guys With A Camera followed you. I was like, what is this? And I clicked on it and it was you, and you like made this page. So I think that was you kind of, you know, putting like an official stamp on, right, okay, we are, this is something that we're going to work towards now.
Yeah, like, so I'd had a script that I'd written. Like, there was no kind of thought. It was just the idea was that, oh, we should start making more films on our own. And I had a script that I'd kind of informally written called Look What I've Got In My Shopping Bag. As you can tell, it's one of those ones where you come up with the title first and then think, what on earth is the plot to that? I had to figure something out. So, yeah, I just got Connor, John, a couple of the other people that I'd met on those courses. We just went and filmed it. And I needed somewhere to release it, but I didn't have a YouTube channel. Well, I had my Lego animation channel, so I rebranded that to just the first thing I could think of, Some Guys With A Camera, because that's literally what we are. And then just pulled some mad like Instagram campaign. We shot to thousands of followers in a couple months. People were just so ready to support us. And then, yeah, I think it became a lot more systematic from then, because we had this Instagram page, we had this brand, and then the brand only then solidified over the years.
And then we were able to build a network. So, you know, people would come to us with ideas and go, I've got a script. Like Ethan, who Connor met at college, he came to Connor with a script and then Connor mentioned it to us. And then we were like, right, yeah, let's get our hands on this. Yeah. Let's make this together. So it's a way to kind of meet like-minded creatives.
I think we just utilize social media so heavily. Like, probably wouldn't like put it past the idea that we're more of an Instagram page than an actual company. We just kind of like, I work in social media now as well. So it's just that idea of there's so many strings you can pull from that whole self-promotion idea. And yeah, that's how we promote our stuff. That's how people find out about us, really. So obviously we don't have the funding to be on telly or boards and stuff. So that's it. So our use of social media is probably the best example of like, right, what resources do we have? And let's utilize them.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting because social media, again, something I've always had, but only I've really thought about a lot in the last 3 years since doing this podcast. And like, I'm still figuring it out. And I'm sure, as you'll be aware, like the algorithms keep changing. It becomes harder if you don't have money and stuff to like find out what the, especially with Instagram, which I love, but it's like, you know, you finally figure it out, then they change it and it's now Reels or whatever. It's just a nightmare to sort of keep on top of. And you, even if you have thousands of followers, you're like, why have only 40 people seen this thing? It's so frustrating. It's
story of my life.
I know.
It's all about like being authentic though, isn't it?
I think
like,
so.
We've tried to stay very self-aware, even though, you know, we've had the privilege to work on, you know, something that we've made that's fairly large scale for like the level that we're at, but 100%. We've still tried to stay, you know, making fun of ourselves and being like, showing that we're having fun whilst we're doing it. We're not, even though it is a job, obviously, being involved in production, we want to show that we're having, you know, a blast whilst doing it. We're very lucky that that's our calling in that way.
Yeah, no, for sure. And then sometimes remind yourself it's not always about the numbers either, as much as you want people to watch the stuff. Like, you'd rather it was good and 100 people watched it than it was total crap and like thousands watching, and then you'd be a bit like, wow, well, that's not really the reason. That's why I try to always level with myself all the time. Let's talk about Virtuous Pints, which is on Amazon Prime. So tell us about this. How did this all come about? I know you filmed it in 2021, probably started writing it well before that. We're sitting on it for a while before you put it out. So tell us about the whole thing, the process, etc.
So like, all of our ideas of ironically come from like a joke. So like Matt said, our first film as Sunglasses of the Camera was Look What I've Got in My Shopping Bag, which was like a joke title, and then we went on and made the film. Our first kind of go at a feature film was called Illegal Being, and that was a joke. Oh, what if our mate Connor plays an alien? And then, you know, we wrote it and put it together. So this one started off as a joke. Oh, what if John and Connor played like two brothers that ran a brewery? And then we just started coming up with more ridiculous ideas.
It was like the first lockdown that we came, it was April 2020, we first had this whole concept of like, wouldn't it be fun? And you can just tell like, that's when I was writing it from April 2020 to December 2020. And you can just tell how much we miss going the pub.
I was going to say, was it just because you were missing the paints?
Definitely. Like, you can just tell that sense of like, yeah, that sense of camaraderie that we really, really miss. And then this is what really helped it when we were finally able to film it, was June 2021 to August 2021. And that was when the lockdown restrictions were being eased. So when there's all these people together, all these scenes of everyone celebrating in pubs, that actually was the first time people had really been to the pub since then. And I think, you know, then after that, it took about 2 years to get edited. I was living away for uni, which really didn't help me like be able to foresee the post-production process. I know people had personal setbacks and things as well, but eventually it got done this summer and then released finally in November. But I think it did come out at a good time in the end. Like, if it had come out when there was still that buzz of like, oh, like Sunglasses of the Camera making a new series, because we crowdfunded it and stuff, there was quite a buzz. And to be honest, I think a lot of that, people just got used to the fact it was coming out and got really impatient. So I would have liked it to come out maybe a bit earlier, but it's out now and we could only make the best that we could.
The whole idea with it was that it was this longing for, it was about like tackling loneliness in lockdown. Like, we were lucky that we were together during lockdown, but most of the people in the cast and crew, you know, they didn't have a sibling or a friend that they were living with to, you know, to get through it with together. And so we did start off doing like Zoom rehearsals.
Yeah.
And that was good. I just remember that big buzz of like, this is something that we're working towards as a group. Because I think at the time there was the rule of six.
Yeah.
Where only like six people could go out for a drink together or like be in a group of six, which is bizarre. Like, I remember we had to contact the police because we were doing like a party scene and we had to go, you know, this isn't like a real party. This is like filming.
We're just doing what they're doing in Downing Street just now. It's not, you know.
Yeah. But now all that's come out now, and you know, yeah, we would have been fine.
Yeah, but yeah. It's a weird time to make that.
Oh man, my first job in telly was in COVID, actually. I used to be the COVID assistant on a drama, and I had to give out masks and do temperatures. And it's wild that that was only 2-3 years ago. It just feels like a totally different world. But no, that must have been tricky making it in those conditions as well.
It was hard, wasn't it?
It was hard. Like, there was a lot of, I hate uncertainty as well. Like, if I don't know that something can go ahead, I can't really look forward to it. So it was really weird for me because I really thoroughly organized. Like, I just, my biggest pet peeve in the whole industry is people who aren't organized with what they're doing. I don't mind things being unpaid. And a lot of people on this web, vast majority were volunteers anyway. But like, how am I supposed to care about your project if you don't even care about it? So my thing is that I put so much organization and care into the way that the filming was organized, which then meant, to be honest, that it had to go ahead on the days that it did. So it's a miracle it all went to plan. I don't remember any filming ever being postponed or anything. There were a couple of cast members that did actually catch the virus during filming, but we just worked around that. There's no way I was going to cancel a filming session if it didn't have to be.
Yeah, no, very hard logistically. I think as well, the thing you're saying about organization, my sort of, I was discussing this with some colleagues on the train home from work earlier, but like, there's a big problem in this industry of people that don't know how to be managers because they've never been taught how to be managers. And then they're not necessarily, a lot of them are good people as well. But if you're a creative person and you say you're good at a role, doesn't necessarily mean you're good at managing a team of people. And, you know, it's a skill as well that in itself, and I don't think a lot of people know how to do it. And I think there's a massive issue on a lot of productions that I've been involved with or that I know people have worked on that are just a shambles from the top down. And it means people are working long hours. And as you say, it feels like unorganized and like crew and stuff aren't cared for. And I think that makes a big difference when they are. So no, I think there's a big industry-wide problem, which I won't name anyone obviously on this. I'll be very professional, but I've heard a lot of things about similar issues and experienced them as well. So yeah, I think it's a good thing to be aware of. How did you sort of go about getting like this made, like with the crowdfunding and things? Because people will be really keen to hear. There'll probably be people listening going, I really want to make a film. And you're good examples of people that have went out and made like a series yourself without anyone signing off.
We just kind of, generally, it sounds silly, but we just kind of learned as we went along. So we found Indiegogo, which was our crowdfunding page. We picked that one because a lot of films of and like shows of a similar kind of level to ours
use that.
We'd done kind of like a rough budget for, you know, locations, props, costumes, insurance, certain things like that. And then we got to our kind of 2 grand figure from that. So we set that as a goal. And then I don't think we realistically thought we'd get anywhere near that.
I didn't think we'd even get 1 grand. We just set 2 to kind of be like, because, you know, ideally I would have put like 10 million on there, but people are going to say, you know, they've only got 500 quid and they're going to get 10 million. Let's not bother doing it. And so we tried to think, you know, let's do as much as we can be cheeky enough to try and get, but, you know, not something that's going to put people off. And then we actually exceeded that. We got 2.5 grand in the end, which was just unbelievable. Obviously, you know, in an ideal world, it should have been a lot more than that. And there's a, you know, watching the series back, it doesn't help that I made it when I was 19. There's a lot of, you know, scenes that should have had more investment, but for the level we were at, I'm so proud of it.
You've got to stay really consistent and really, really active with the crowdfunding. So we did all sorts, didn't we? We did like test footage, we got like drawings of like the characters and the logos, and we signed them, and then we were like, we'll raffle this off to everyone that's crowdfunded. We got like beer coasters with the Birchall's logo on and signed them.
Yeah.
And gave them away. We did one where I think we were close to 1 grand. And I was like, okay, next person to donate and get us over that, we'll give you the series as soon as it is ready, like way before it comes out. But then there were other ones as well, like a certain amount to be an executive producer or like have a like a line in the film as well, or have like a beer named after you. I think that the key was having a lot of creative ways to make people donate, because people will want to help. People, you know, friends, family, so supportive, but it's about getting the attraction from other people that have nothing to do with the project, might just want to, you know, someone might fancy donating to help a project if it means that they can have like a line and there's like another credit and something that they can use in the showreel. Or, you know, some people, like I think the one have a beer named after you was a lot of fun.
That was really popular as well. Just yeah, creative ways, because people, you know, we're a consumerist society, people want something back if they're giving you money, especially if they don't know you. And our cheapest one film was for £10, your name was in the credits, which I thought was a pretty good deal. So those people, you know, a tenner is like, you know, it's not an obscene amount of money, and you get to now their names are on Amazon Prime. So it's just little ways of getting people to want to donate rather than just saying, please donate. There has to be something in it for them as well.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. And yeah, no, I suppose, as you say, you have to be creative, especially when you're doing it on your own back. Like, you know, they don't have a big investment behind it. So that must be tricky. I was just thinking, I'm not actually asking either of you to tell us what the show's about. Do you want to quickly give us a quick description? Why should people go and watch it? Obviously, it's on Amazon Prime. You can click below the podcast right now to go and watch it. But what's it about so people know, etc.?
It's a dark comedy, sitcom-esque series about two brothers who own a brewery in Liverpool. And it's all about that we've all been to, like, pubs or, like, craft beer pubs and just those crazy people that are attracted to weird beers. We were just fascinated by that whole idea. So William, who's played by John, is... Do you want to describe William?
Yeah, so my character is... He's in charge of the company. He's struggling a lot with mental health, you know, addiction to alcohol as well. So being around beer doesn't help him. But it's about his relationship with his brother, his friends who are trying to, you know, help him through this, whilst he's also trying to, you know, keep a really chaotic company together. Yeah, and then Connor's character, who he plays the other brother, he's more aggressive and he's more, like, ruthless. And he secretly... Didn't you call it, like, succession, like, in a brewery?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, he's plotting to be a bit higher up than he actually is. I think he's the one who... I mean, neither of them are a good choice to run the brewery. Will's too soft, Thomas is too harsh, but I think a lot of people are a bit scared of Thomas because they know that he would be a much more toxic workplace was he given full power. So it's about them. They have... So their beer, Birchall's, is 9%, which is about double the strength of most beers that you would find in a pub, like a lager. It's a very strong IPA, extra, extra strong, but the stronger beer is, the more it's taxed, because the beer tax for some stupid reason is leveled against how strong things are. So they're really suffering, especially when a new beer is released by one of Will's old, like, school rivals. There's this trendy new local beer that they've got to compete with, and the tax situation really isn't helping it. So to combat that, they decide to kidnap a local MP and force him to lower the beer tax. So that's the main on-running storyline.
But we've also got loads of other kind of ridiculous subplots. So we're very inspired by Monty Python. What other kind of comedies inspired this?
So many.
But I think, like, things like Monty Python, where it's just... one minute it's believable and then something ridiculous happens. So we've got a scene where... we've got, like, a plot with... We're trying to get a famous person to, like, market the beer. So we get, like, a metal singer.
Yeah.
And then he ends up doing something really bad. So
backfires on them. There's a lot of traditional, like, sitcom setups that then get paid off. And there's a lot of, again, like, ongoing drama. I think what I pride myself in most as a director, and a lot of people, you know, think this is my weakness actually, is tonal inconsistency. But to be honest, I love it. And I think life is tonally inconsistent. So my work as a director generally will have a really funny scene, then the next scene is depressing, extremely depressing, because that's what life is like. And I like that jarringness. Again, a lot of people don't like that, but that's something I found really interesting. It just felt a lot more open world. You don't really know if the episode's going to be sad or happy.
Especially when alcohol's involved, like, it's extremely unpredictable.
Well, that's the thing, and that's what really fascinates me, and that was how I wanted to use alcohol throughout the show, because, like, on a night out, you just don't know how it's going to go. You don't know if you're going to be crying in the corner or if you're going to be, like, up dancing on the tables. It's just fascinating to play with that with these characters.
That's really interesting, sort of thing you were saying about tone, and I'm going to think about that more as a script editor, when, you know, because a lot of my job is very much like, it's improving scripts, and you're working collaboratively with a production company and a writer to try and, like, represent the script almost. And I think sometimes you can get very much sucked into, like, the traditional way of doing things. So I think it's interesting sometimes when I speak to directors and other writers, like, to think, am I thinking outside the box enough? Because that is quite an interesting idea. I also wanted to ask how you got this on Prime. Like, did you have to, like, send it in to them? Did you have to, like, because I'm assuming they don't just put anything on Prime, do they? Has to be to a certain level.
Yeah, there's Amazon Prime Video Direct, which is their, like, submission submission service. They're the only like major streaming giant that you can just go to. But it was quite scary because we were like, we're going to submit it to Prime. But the only other alternative is YouTube. And I know that there's nothing wrong with YouTube. There's actually some very, very professional stuff that's only on YouTube. Mm. But you can just put anything on there and it's not...
It has that stigma, doesn't it? That people go, oh, it's just a YouTube series. Yeah. They don't take it seriously.
You could literally just film anything and put it on there. So, you know, we thought the series deserves a bit better. And thankfully, Prime thought the same. We just filled out this exhausting form on Prime Video Direct. And then it took a while. In fact, it took way too long to get accepted, which just added to the delay. And I think we'd sort of accepted that it wasn't going to get on there. And then one Friday, I was having a bad day. I was on my lunch break. And the news I just needed more than anything in the world was a green dot saying accepted. And that's what I got when I opened my phone. I was so happy.
Right. And there was straight away it was up and people could see it.
Yeah. Well, we'd requested the release date of the 10th of November. So we had a month to promote the fact that it was on Prime. So right. I had all the... It was so funny. I had like two different universes of graphics. I had posters with Birchall's now on Prime, and I had YouTube. I had posters with Birchall's now on YouTube, and I'm both ready to go.
But there's like those like folders, like memes of Hillary wins, memes of Trump.
Yeah, exactly. I had it all lined up, every possible scenario, and then thankfully the best case scenario was the one that went ahead. So yeah. Got out all this content that night, which was really exciting. But yeah, we had a month to you know do a bit of promo in the run up to it.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's amazing news. And as I say, there's a link to the show in the show notes of the podcast. But I also quickly want to ask about the practical nature of it, because the people listening going, like, I want to know how they made this and stuff. And how did you get cameras and equipment? And like, was that all part of the crowdfunding? Were you using different types of cameras? Were you in the edit after? Were you editing it yourself? Were you using professional editors and stuff?
Yes, with cameramen. We had a few different cameramen over the course of the show. And the cameraman we used most was Ethan, who actually plays the MP in the show, and he was also assistant director as well. This man was like playing 4D chess, trying to balance all these roles. But so sometimes we'd have people step in for him to film and things, so it is filmed on different cameras, but we had to try and I edited it on Premiere Pro, and I tried to match it the best I could.
Yeah, we were very lucky that there were so many people that, you know, offered themselves, like saying, I want to be involved, like if you ever need help with this or that, like give us a shout. And you know, people like followed through on the promises and had fun, and
people were excited about it, which I was really proud of. I think, you know, it's a lot to ask just to say, oh, do you want to come and be on this project, give up so much of your time, because this in essence was giving up your whole summer. You weren't even allowed to get a haircut, were you?
Yes.
You know, you did have to give up your summer to be in this, but there's about 100 people involved with this show, and I think, you know, I really do think we were able to create something that people were excited about and they wanted to support us, rather than just feeling like they were guilt tripped into doing a favor for a mate. It felt like, you know, something exciting to be a part of.
And like, you know, people made friends for life on that production.
People kept in touch to this very day, which is just so lovely. Like and the amount of people that have worked with each other because of this show as well, it's opened doors for a lot of people, I think, and people make friends.
And is there going to be a second series of Birchall's Pints? Is there going to be a second one?
There's definitely ideas for it. I think, you know, whether it returns in like 5 years or like 5 months, I don't know, but there's ideas there. I'm just going to say it would have to feel right, and it would have, certainly season one would have had to have got a good enough, you know, reception to warrant that. Otherwise, I've got a massive backlog of other projects that I want to do and test the waters with them.
It was kind of like right place at the right time when we did film it, because I was kind of between jobs. I think you were...
I had a very casual job, so yeah. I had the time, yeah.
So we had like the whole summer pretty much working full-time, non-stop on Just Birchall's. I was in a play as well at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was just lovely to spend that summer in 2021, like, you know, working full-time as a creator and, you know, having a taste of what that was like, and just very stressful at times as well. But, you know, it was just such an amazing feeling to, like, do something that you're so proud of.
No, I mean, it's a big ask as well. And I was watching that Russell T. Davis documentary last night, and they were talking about Queer as Folk in it, which I think that's the name of the show. I think they just did one series of it. And he was like, just going to leave it at one. And I think he maybe wrapped up in two specials, but there you go. You can maybe just do two special episodes in the future to wrap it all up and go into the next thing. What are your sort of general plans for the future? Obviously, I know, John, you're more interested in the acting side, and Matt, you were saying at the start, you kind of see yourself first and foremost as a bit of a director, but are you kind of both wanting to pursue those particular professions, or are you kind of open-minded about the future?
Definitely, like, the dream is still to do acting. I am working a full-time job, and then of an evening I'm doing either acting classes or rehearsals or self-tapes. Most nights a week I'll be doing something to do with acting in the evening, so it's like, although my whole day is taken up, I won't let that take like the power away and like let that define me. I want to be defined by the stuff that I'm actually passionate in, and hopefully, you know, I'll just keep up the grind and keep on being persistent and trying to improve myself. And, you know, maybe I'll get lucky, and even if I don't, like, you know, get to do it full time, it's definitely something that I'll always do alongside whatever else I do. But that is the dream.
Yeah, for me too. So not long graduated from uni, only just moved back to Liverpool. So working a bit of a casual job while basically getting back onto the creative scene in the rest of the free time that I do have. In the new year, I'm starting work on the biggest project of my life, but I can't talk about it, which is very, very frustrating. But I'm so excited about that. I've been waiting 2 years for it to get made, and some reason it's all actually going to be able to go ahead, I hope. But yeah, there's that, and there's hopefully be a good year next year, I think, in terms of getting onto the ladder that I want to be on.
Exciting. Yeah, well, when this comes out, it will be in 2024. You probably have started on that, so, you know, good luck. I know we've been speaking for nearly there, so I'll start to sort of wrap things up, but obviously young people, especially young men, we don't talk about mental health and things enough. I love asking this question. I think it's really important, because I think often creative people don't see themselves as having to be healthy, and I think often it's like that sort of tortured artist mentality. But how do you both protect your mental health in such a stressful industry, especially both having to work other jobs to support your creative art work and stuff?
I think because a lot of the acting projects I do are unpaid at the moment, if I lose the love for the project that I'm doing, I'll step down, obviously, like, with plenty of notice that they'll have time to replace me or whatever. But I will give myself that distance between, I will give myself that kind of that space to, you know, to say no if it doesn't feel right, if it's kind of invading my well-being, and like if it feels like I'm working too hard on something that I don't care about, I will step down. So that's one kind of way. I think I always like to pick auditions that are going to make me happy in some way. So there's, for example, there's been so many ones in Manchester and a little further away that I would love to have gone for, but I know, like, you've got to kind of put yourself first and go, okay, realistic, I'm not going to be able to travel there every night. I'll have to miss a lot of my job. So it's just about being patient with certain things as well. And it's okay to not, to have big breaks between projects as well. Yeah, because it is such an unpredictable, like, fickle industry as well. It's not always your fault if you get rejected from a project. Yeah, these are all just kind of like things that I keep reminding myself to keep myself sane.
Yeah, I think for me, it's as a producer and director, I have the control. I have more control to prevent basically stuff like that from happening. So I've got a great deal of responsibility, and I've learned a lot from past mistakes about how much, you know, you might want it to be a wholesome set, but you're letting your stress take over it for you, and your project will never mean as much to everyone else. So when you get stressed, they don't understand that. So basically trying to not let that happen and make sure that it is a wholesome environment. My main thing is making sure that people make friends. If people don't get at least one lifelong friend from one of my projects, I consider it a failure. I try to have, again, a project, as I was saying earlier, I like to have projects where people are excited about being in it. It's not just, oh, that thing I've got to do, I've got to go and film that bit. It's, no, I'm doing this and I can't wait for it.
Thank you both for answering that question. It's important to sort of be honest and talk about it. Just get a real job. Obviously, the name of this podcast is Just Get a Real Job. We'd all had to work jobs we don't like, or part-time jobs to pay the bills, but like, what's the worst part-time or quote real job you both had to work to support yourself as artists? John, you're sort of nodding your head there, you can try to go first.
So it was just, so in lockdown, so it was 2020, I think we just filmed a short film, Nick and Liv Together, because there was, I think from March till about September, it was pretty much like full on lockdown. And then kind of early September, everything kind of shut down again for that second lockdown. And in that time, I was, you know, I was kind of lost, you know, going through it again. I just graduated, I'd just moved back home. I was very lucky to have the opportunity to work. I did a bit of work twice a week, and like, it was like a fruit and veg warehouse, which doesn't sound that bad, but it was like, you know, 10-hour shifts, you know, without a break, without lunch, getting shouted at for sitting down, lifting heavy boxes. It wasn't good at all. There was no like positives of that job apart from the money. So I'd spend a lot of time when I could listening to podcasts about acting, about the arts, to kind of keep myself going. Otherwise I would have just completely lost faith in myself. I would have let my mental health kind of nosedive, but I kept myself going until I kept auditioning for things. It was kind of during that period as well that I decided, right, I'm going to pull my socks up. I'm never going to let myself put so much energy into something that I don't care about. I'm not going to let myself get bullied around. I'm going to create and forge my own future. Otherwise, you know, I'll never forgive myself if I don't chase my dreams. And I remember applying for A Midsummer Night's Dream, which was, I'm trying to remember around what time. I think it was around February time, March time maybe, in 2021. And I just knew when I got accepted, yeah, this is my calling to leave the fruit and veg job for a little bit while I've got a bit of savings and just kind of put all my energy, all my love, all my care into this production. It was directed by Christopher Lee Power from the Power Foundation. He's based
who we've had on the podcast as well.
He's fantastic.
What a small world it is. Inspiring.
I know, exactly. But I'd never done Shakespeare. I'd not really done theatre in terms of like a full-on play, but he had faith in me. It felt like I played the role of Bottom, who's like a wannabe actor. He tries to take over everything. He tries to make himself be all the roles, but it's that enthusiasm and that like passion for that character that really, you know, helped me see the light and be like, yeah, I see a lot of myself in this character. And Christopher was fantastic at like, I think I was one of the only ones who had never done like a professional job before, but he nurtured me and, you know, pushed me to what I believe is like my best performance to date. So I'll always be grateful for him for that. Yeah, that was a long-winded answer, but that's how
thank you.
Got myself out of that
one. I mean, we recorded that episode of Christopher Neely. Well, it was very early on in the podcast, so probably about well over two and a half years ago. But I'll put a wee link to that episode in the show notes now as well, because, you know, probably a lot of new listeners haven't went that far back. So it's a good one. But thank you very much for your answer. I appreciate the detail you went into there. No, it's a really nice, honest answer. Matt, what about yourself? Have you had any jobs?
When I was at uni, I did a lot of like casual work. And one time I came back home because I'd heard it was, you know, not a good shift, but reliable money. So I did a placement at the races. And oh my God, like after the first day, I had like, I was in like the worst pain of my life, but the only way I could describe it was like blisters, but it felt like I was walking on lava with like shards of glass stuck in my feet. I was just it was in so much pain. But to everyone else, you know, you just got sore feet, like what are you complaining about? So it's just walking around, the amount of steps I had to do was just adding to it so much. And then on the first day, I was just scraping some plates. It wasn't even meant to be my job. And then just this horrible, horrible person just screamed at me like, that's the wrong bin. That's not the food bin. You know this, you've been told this. And I was like, I've not been told this. I don't know. This isn't my job. But obviously reason and those people don't go hand in hand. So anything I said just went out the other ear. So it was just absolute screaming at me, and I was just thinking, what on earth? Who cares what bin it is? You are not getting paid enough to shout at me. Why do you care? The event went on as normal. No one died because I'd put something in the wrong bin. See, that really did not need to happen. I really did not need to be screamed at. It wasn't a life or death scenario. Again, to link it back into how that's impacting me, like now I just look at things, I'm like, is that worth shouting about? Is the world gonna crumble if you put something in the wrong bin? No, it's not. And it's just about being a very conscious boss to people, I think. Yeah. Especially if they're only there for 3 days, because to be honest, if I didn't really need the money, I would have just quit that day, because I wasn't employed by them. I was just doing a bit of casual work. So again, ties into my philosophy, people should want to be doing the work.
And I think as well, you talked about this earlier when you were talking about how you run a set and things, but like another thing, I've said this loads in this episode today, but I've been referencing bloody everything, but it's fine. I think it's a good one, but like, I think it's a podcast, but they're talking about if people in a position of power are stressed, people who are in the hierarchy below them take on their stress. So it's really important that people in positions of power, we all get stressed by the way, and it can't be helped, but I think there's more reason they need to try and manage their emotions and stress. It's really important, because it feeds down the chain. So no, yeah, completely agree. I've got one more question for you both. I appreciate your time tonight, but what would sort of your closing advice be for anyone that wants to do what you do? And I'm sure you've got some interesting answers, having been so proactive at such a young age, etc.
I think you've got to absolutely love it. It's got to be, I'm very blessed to have a great acting teacher, Connor Calland, who was in Hollyoaks. He's been in like Doctor Who as well, Last Night in Soho. He's one of the tutors at ACT Up North in Liverpool. They've also got classes in Manchester and Leeds and online as well. But he says, you've got to love acting as much as, you know, your top hobbies. So if you're a football fan, like we are, big Everton fans.
Good. You know, we'll talk about this off air. It's fine.
You've got to love acting, and you've got to love everything about it. You've got to know the casting directors, like, you know, the players of your team. You've got to live and breathe it, because if you don't, then, you know, there's no point. Just, you're not gonna enjoy it. You're not gonna, it's a business that requires a lot of patience, a lot of sacrifices, a lot of compromises. You're gonna have to be patient until you get where you want to be. And I'm still at the very, very beginning of my journey, but that these are some of the things that I've kind of learned from, you know, people who have gone on to very, very good things.
Yeah, I think for me, it would be very much that, like, make friends, not just in the industry, but like friends around you. I'm really lucky that, you know, most of my projects have been with like lifelong friends. Like what I do with some guys with a camera, I, as a director, it's different because you're only really doing one or two projects at a time. So, you know, once the actors have shot their scenes, I'm working on that for another year still. So I need the people around me on that project to be the sort of people I want to be around. Otherwise, there's no point. And yeah, I think having my closest friends in the world be the people that I make films with is a massive privilege. And I would encourage people to surround yourself with the right people and do all this crazy stuff with your friends.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for another great answer. Listen, John, Matt, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. Listen, it's really inspiring, like, to have made a film when you're 19, especially, Matt. It's like, do you know what I mean? I was never that proactive at that young an age. Not that I'm old now, but do you know what I mean? Like, one of my big regrets is I wasn't more proactive at a young age. So it's really inspiring for both to hear that you both just sort of went out and made it happen with friends and stuff, and I've got something on Amazon Prime. Do you want to quickly plug where people can follow you? There'll be links to all this stuff, but do you quickly do a little plug?
Our main page is at Some Guys With A Camera on Instagram. We're also Some Guys With A Camera on Facebook and at SGWAC on Twitter. But our main one is Instagram. And then you can watch Birchall's Pints on Amazon Prime by just sharing. You can watch Birchall's Pints on Amazon Prime by just searching for it.
But share it as well. Why not promote it?
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you very much, both. Have a lovely evening now.
Been a pleasure. Thanks so much for having us on.
Well, there you go. That was episode 131. Thank you again to John and Matt for their time. Really enjoyed chatting to them last year. And yeah, it was great to finally put this episode out. I hope you enjoyed it. They had lots of interesting things to say. Just a reminder as well, there's links in the show notes to Some Guys With A Camera's Instagram page. There's links to the Amazon Prime if you want to watch Birchall's Pints. I think the entire first series is, you can get it for like $4.99 or something. So it's all there if you want to check that out. And as always as well, just my weekly plea for you to please help us keep growing the podcast by sharing us on social media. If you have friends that maybe particularly working in the creative industries or you think would be interested in this podcast, be sure to send them it. Of course, we've done 131 episodes now, so there's a massive back catalogue full of great chats with some incredible people for you to check out. So if this is your first time listening and you really enjoyed today's episode, there's lots more like it. So to be sure and have a wee look for the back catalogue. Of course, not every episode might be for you, because we do have a range of different creative people on, but there is bound to be some stuff in there that you'll be interested in or will be of use to you. This is also a resource as well as a podcast, and, you know, really proud of some of the conversations we'd had and some of the sort of lessons that are there to be learned, etc., from the guests we'd had on. We also have a Patreon page as well, and, you know, all the money we make from that goes back into making this podcast as good as it can be. But that's all we have time for this week. Thank you for listening. As always, a massive shout out to Amy Dinsdale, who does the artwork for this podcast, and to Elliot Mitchell, who edits this podcast. We hope you all have a great end of the week, and we'll be back in next Wednesday with another episode of Just Get A Real Job. Just get a real job.